Morning, everyone. We're in Kuf Chaf Zayin Amud Beis. We're starting a new sugya today based off the Mishnah. Okay, let's remind each other the Mishnah. The Mishnah you're going to see on Kuf Chaf Zayin Amud Aleph at the bottom of the Amud Ha'Eiv Va'Basim Adudalim Be'Behema. We come back to a topic which the Masechta seems to really enjoy, and that is dangling limbs. And how do you? It seems certainly seems that way. We've discussed that at length in the fourth parak, and it comes back again here in the ninth parak. And the Mishnah says that if you have a dangling limb, so tamim tamas ochlim bim kalman. So unbelievable chiddush of the Mishnah, which is it's food, even though it's still connected to the animal, and it is still connected to the animal. And the evidence, the best evidence I could provide that this dangling limb is still connected to the animal is because it's not evir menachai. Had it been disconnected from the animal legally, even though it's somewhat still attached, had it been disconnected legally, then we would have seen the prohibition of evir menachai, and it's not evir menachai. And the reason why we know it's not evir menachai is because the Mishnah says it's from tamim tamas ochlim. Tumas ochlin just simply means that it's susceptible to tumma. That if I have a sheretz or any source of tumma come into contact with it, it's going to become tummy. But it's not a source itself. Now we know, right? One of the basic rules of Eivir Menachai is that Eivir Menachai is a source of tumma. It's an avatum. In fact, the source of that law is coming up in today's daf. So this dangling limb is certainly, for most intent and purpose, is still connected part of them. It's still part of the mother. So again, I go back to that. It's still part of the animal. But in the world of Tumas Ochlin, the way I explained it yesterday and the way we review today, in terms of Tumas Ochlin, there's a much looser definition of what Ochel is in order to be subject to Tumas Ochlin. And the loose definition of Ochlin is as long as it's committed to be eaten. And it's interesting, and I'm going to show you a number of examples of this over the course of today. Even if you're not allowed to eat it, meaning even if it's usher to eat, but it's committed to be eaten, and I should point out another important qualification over here, and it's actually edible. Meaning I can't turn to this desk and say, you know what? I'm committing to eat this desk. Desk is not going to be subject to Tumas Ochlin. Okay? It's not, because it's not edible. In the world of Tumas Ochlin, as long as you're committed to eat it, and it's edible, even if halachically you're not allowed to eat it, that's ochel. In the world of Tumas Ochlin, that's going to be ochel. So here I have this dangling limb. As long as it's committed to be eaten, Rashi back in the Mishnah said, what commitment did you make? Take a look at that second Rashi back in the Mishnah, and review what we saw yesterday. You decide, you know what, I'm going to give it to a non-Jew. Mind you, by the way, you really, at this point in time, you can't even give it to a non-Jew. It's still part of the mother, it's still part of the animal. Okay, so it doesn't matter. In other words, in Tumas Ochlin, as long as you commit to eat it, it's not subject to Tumas Ochlin. And then there's a side point of the Mishnah, which is, not such a side point, but it also needs Hechsher. It also needs preparation to come into contact with a liquid. Okay, then the Mishnah went on to discuss another case. We're now on the top of Kuf Chaf Zayin Amud Beis, just reviewing the Mishnah. Nishchata HaBehema. Now, I have this animal with a dangling limb, and I shecht the animal. So hochshara b'dameha divrei Rabbi Meir. So Rabbi Meir says that limb becomes hochshar. It becomes susceptible to tumah, prepared for tumah. Tumas ochlin, of course. Why? How did that happen? Because agav the behema, meaning it's part of the animal. The animal became mochshar. How did the animal become mochshar? The blood that was spreading out of the neck of the animal when you shechted it. The assumption is the blood is now going to come into contact with the body of the animal. And so therefore the animal is mukhshar lekabel tuma, consequently, so is the limb as well. And Rabbi Shimon Amar, lo hukhshar. And Rabbi Shimon says, no, that didn't happen. Meaning, not the reality did not change, but the limb did not become mukhshar lekabel tuma. Okay. Here's what we know. There's a machlokus in the Mishnah between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Shimon. I have a dangling limb of an animal. I shech the animal. Now let's remind ourselves, the animal itself, you're allowed to eat. You shechted it. The limb, you're not allowed to eat. It's an Avraham Aduldal. It was a hanging limb. Okay, that's not our issue. The only issue left to discuss now is, and by the way, it's not Avraham Menachai as well, because Avraham Menachai is only when I ripped it off ripped it off. Here I didn't rip it off. The only issue is, this limb, did it receive Hechsher by virtue of the fact that it was connected to the rest of the animal? And the rest of the animal did receive Hechsher. Okay. What's the basis of the machlokus? So here the Gemara is not at a loss. The Gemara will now provide six possible explanations of the machlokas between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Shimon. Okay, that's correct. Six. But my kamiflagi. So the Gemara wants to know, what's this machlokas between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Shimon? Amar Rabbi, be behem anasi yad la'ever kamiflagi. Mar savra ein behem anasi yad la'ever. Umar savra behem anasi yad la'ever. First way to explain it. Goes like this. Look. We know that we've been discussing since the beginning of the ninth parak the concept of yad. Yad means a handle, meaning I pick something up using something else as a facilitator, as a way of handling an item. Okay, the whole concept of yad. Now you remember back then, what is it? What's the principles? How does yad operate? It's machnis u'motzi. It's a conductor for tumma. It can import tumma into the item and it can export tumma in the item. Now you'll also remember we had another debate earlier, way early in the ninth parak of Chulin. Can a yad also be a conductor for hechsher? Meaning we know that any food, in order for it to become susceptible to tumma, first needs to come into contact with a liquid. What if the food didn't come into contact with the liquid, but the yad did? The yad came into contact with the liquid. So just like the yad can be a conductor for tumma, can a yad be a conductor for hechsher? So that was a debate. Right now, at this point in the Gemara, we're going to assume the answer is yes. A yad can be a conductor for hechsher. Okay, so according to Rabbah, the first way we're going to explain the machlokas is like this. In other words, we have an animal and we have a limb of the animal. Okay, the limb of the animal obviously represents a small portion of the animal itself. It's significant, but in terms of amounts, in terms of ratio, big animal, small limb. Okay, can we view the animal as a yad for the limb? Okay. Certainly the limb is not, in other words, if I want to pick up the animal, I'm not going to certainly pick it up from that limb. That limb is barely hanging on. But if I want to pick up that limb, can I basically look at the entire animal as a yad for the limb? I guess conceptually we're not used to that. Meaning a yad usually is like the stem of a fruit. That's a yad. That's your classic yad. But over here, you're talking about looking at the entire animal, the remaining part of the animal, as a yad for the limb. And what Rabbah's now suggesting is that's exactly the machlokas. Whereas according to Rabbi Meir says that the limb becomes huchshir l'kabel tuma, yes. Because what we're basically going to say is that when you shechted it, the blood spurts on the animal. The animal is a yad for the limb. And so therefore, the animal is going to convey the hechsher to the limb. That's Rabbi Meir's position. And Rabbi Shimon says no. No, because we're not going to look at the animal as a yad for the limb. Okay? That's explanation number one. Let's move on. Abaye Amar Ba'ochez B'katamein Gadol Ola Imo Kamiflgi. Abaye says, look, I have two pieces connected to one another, but it's a tenuous connection. Like our animal over here. Where the Eshecht of the animal, and now I have an animal with a limb, and the limb is barely hanging on. Now, if I pick up the animal, the limb is going to come along for the ride. Okay, even though it's a tenuous connection. If I pick up the limb, probably not. Meaning, what's going to happen is that the limb is just going to snap off. Okay, and here's it's a great conceptual idea. When I have this phenomena, where I have two things connected together, tenuous connection, if I pick up the big and the small comes along for the ride, but if I pick up the small, the big will not come along for the ride, can I view that as one entity? Gemara says maybe that's the machlokas. So the Gemara says that's the machlokas. And the Gemara says, and this was proposed by Abaye, the offer of Yochanan Savar Ba'ochiz B'Kadmein Gadol Olaimo Kamiflagi. And you know who also agrees with Abaye? Rav Yochanan, the Amora of Eretz Yisrael. So he says, same explanation of our Mishnah, that Rav Meir and Rabbi Shimon are arguing about this concept, where if I pick up the smaller end, but the bigger end does not come along for the ride, can I view that as one single entity? The Rabbi Yochanan, Rami.
Isn't it true that the smaller end has no function?
It doesn't matter. Function over here is not the issue. The issue is, can I view the smaller end as part of the larger end? Okay. How do I look at these two items which have this tenuous connection? Rami de Rameir de Rameir mi amar Rabbi Meir ochas because mingar olim harehu kamo veriminu. You see, and you know that Rav Yochanan agrees with Abaye because look, Rav Yochanan says, I'm going to show you a Mishnah, and this Mishnah is going to prove a contradiction between Rav Meir and Rav Meir. The Mishnah over the Mishnah in Tvul Yom discusses the following: Ochel shenifras ha'meura b'mitzas. You have ochel, you have food. Now it's a Mishnah in Tvul Yom. We're talking about truma. Okay, Rashi says we're talking about truma. So this is a truma food, and it's being handled by a Tvul Yom. Remember what a Tvul Yom is? Somebody who was tameh, toveled in the mikvah. That period of time between toveling in the mikvah and Harav Shemesh until nightfall. So for that period of time, he has a little bit of residual tumah, and he's called the Tvul Yom. What's the status of this individual? So simply we're going to say he's a sheni l'tumah. Okay? That may not be perfectly accurate, but it's a good description of him. Right? Why do we say that? Because if he handles truma, the truma will become tame, which is usually how a sheni works. A sheni is going to be metame truma. Okay, more technically, it's going to passel truma. Okay, but you get the basic idea. The Mishnah in Tvul Yom discusses the following. Ochel shenifras ha'meura b'mitzas. If I have a food that has a tenuous connection, Rebbe Meir Omer. Now, right, the Mishnah in Tvul Yom is telling us that this is the opinion of Rebbe Meir, which is, im ochez b'katav v'gado ola imo, harei kamavu. In this two items, or really it's one item with a tenuous connection between the two parts of the item, if I pick up the small end and the large end comes along, meaning the connection is that strong, harehu kamahu. V'imlav, eino kamahu. But if not, eino kamahu. So you see the Mishnah Tvul Yom says that for Rav Meir, from Rav Meir's standpoint, for two items to be considered connected, one singular item, it has to be that the connection is so strong that I pick up the small end and the big end comes along for the ride. That is against what we see in our Mishnah. Because Rav Meir in our Mishnah says that if I have a dangling limb, now again, if I pick up the animal, the dangling limb will come along for the ride. But if I pick up the dangling limb, the rest of the animal won't come along for the ride. And yet Rav Meir says, Hukshara, that the whole animal has received hechsher, which means that Rav Meir in our Mishnah says it's viewed as one item. It's one entity, even though the connection between the limb and the animal is so tenuous that if I pick up the limb, the animal will not come along. So we see what Rav Yochanan's doing? He's pitting our Mishnah in Chulin against the Mishnah in Tvul Yom. So clearly what Rav Yochanan's doing is he's understanding our Mishnah the same way that Abaye does. V'am Rav Yochanan Muchlefes Hashita. And Rav Yochanan is so bothered by this question that he's going to flip one of the shitas. Now it's interesting, you never know, right? Every time we go through this, and by the way, Rav Yochanan is usually the one who says Muchlefes Hashita. I'm not saying that definitively, but in my memory I can think of a couple of other places where Rav Yochanan does that, Muchlefes Hashita. Rav Yochanan will flip. We usually do not know, it's usually open for a debate. Which Mishnah is he flipping? Is he flipping the Chulin Mishnah or is he flipping the Tvul Yom Mishnah? Okay, it's an important question, but for our purposes right now, we'll gloss over it because we're just simply going to point out that in order to coordinate the two positions, he's going to flip one of those Mishnayos. So you see that his understanding of our Mishnah is the same as Abaye. Now the Gemara tries to deflect the whole question of my Kushya. Maybe Rav Meir can make a distinction between our Mishnah and the Mishnah in Tvul Yom because the Mishnah in Tvul Yom is only dealing with a Tvul Yom. Tvul Yom is not a primary tumah. A Tvul Yom is somebody who was tameh, but he toveled in the mikvah. It's a residual tumah. It's not a primary tumah. So maybe in our Mishnah he's being machmir because our Mishnah is dealing with a primary tumah. Maybe the Mishnah in Chulin he's being mekel because it's a secondary tumah. It's a derivative tumah. But it's not a real tumah, right? Much Aaron, like you were discussing earlier this morning. It's a derivative tumah. Now, there is a Rashi, which is difficult to understand. I'll just mention it very quickly. Rashi says, at this point in time, that a Tvul Yom is a tumah derabanan. It's a rabbinic tumah. You'll notice that Rabbi Kiva Eger over here comments on this Rashi, and Rabbi Kiva Eger says, wow, this Rashi is difficult to understand. Rabbi Kiva Eger says, if you look through Shas, he quotes a couple of other places in Shas, he says that you'll see that Tvul Yom is metame even on the Da'araisa level. It's Rabbi Kiva Eger says that what would seem to be the better explanation of our Gemara is not like Rashi that Tfulyum was only Tumma Derabbanan, but rather it's, to quote Rabbi Akiva Eger, it's Kalish Tumaso. It's a weaker Tumma, which we all understand, meaning he toveled in the mikvah. It's a residual Tumma. Okay, I just mentioned that quickly. But let's, in other words, the Gemara...
Can he give off Tumma?
He can be Matami Truma, yeah. In other words, he is a source of Tumma, but to a lesser degree than to somebody who is, who, you know, who's an, is a real source of Tumma. So, Tanya Rebbe Omer, Echad Tulyom, Echad Shar Tumma. So Rebbe, meaning Rebbe Yehuda Nasi, says, I don't see it, there is no difference. The Dilmala Rebbe, Lo Shanele, the Rameir Shanele. So the Gemara says, good. That's Rebbe's position. That may not be Rebbe Meir's position. I'm Rav Yoshia, Hacham Rav Yochanan. Excuse me. So Rav Yoshia says, you know, Rav Yochanan is just simply saying, L'divrei Rebbe Mukhlefes Hashita. Look, you're right. Maybe within Rav Meir, you can make some sort of distinction between Tfulyom and other types of Tumma. Maybe, maybe. But in Rebbe's position, who we know definitively does not distinguish between Tfulyom and other types of Tumma, so according to Rebbe, how do I align our Mishnah in Chulin, the Mishnah of Tfulyom? It's impossible to align them. So Rav Yochanan says, Mukhlefes Hashita. We're going to have to flip. We're going to flip around one of the Mishnayos so that Rav Meir coordinates with one another. Okay? By the way, just an interesting note on this, and that's the end of answer number two. An interesting note over here. Basically, what we see now is there's a major debate. When I have two things which are connected by tenuous connection, and how are we defining tenuous? Where when if I pick up the bigger portion, the smaller portion comes along with it. But if I pick up the smaller portion, the bigger portion is just going to break off if it's a tenuous connection. So we see that there is an opinion in the Mishnah. I don't know whose it is, Rami or Rabbi Shimon, but there's an opinion in the Mishnah that says that's not a good connection. And the two are viewed as two separate entities. Halacha l'maisa, it's brought down in Shulchan Aruch. Halacha l'maisa, you know where this comes up? Shabbos. You know, in Shabbos, you're supposed to have Lechem Mishnah, you're supposed to have two loaves of bread. And, right, this happens sometimes, where one of the loaves that's brought in front of you has got like a little crack in it. Or it's or a piece is broken off. So if a full piece is broken off, a significant piece is broken off, so you got to go get now a new loaf. Usually it's not possible, so you get a matzah. Okay. But what if, let's say they're not broken off, but in other words, they kind of separate a little bit, and there's a tenuous connection between the two pieces of the loaf, you know, of your challah. So do you view it as one, or do you view it as two separate entities? And the Shulchan Aruch says you're going to use the principle that we learned today in the Daf. Unbelievable, right? But it's a Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch says here's what you do: you pick up the large end, the small end comes along with it. That proves nothing. You pick up the small end, right? The smaller end. If the larger piece comes along and doesn't snap off, I guess you got to do it carefully. So then you can view it as one entity. Okay, that's the Shulchan Aruch. So even though I know we're talking about Tumma Tahara, but there is an application of that principle even in our non-Tumma Tahara world. What, like a little suturing, a little? I don't know if that helps. That's interesting. I don't know. Okay. Right. You know what? I'll take a look. I'm not sure. But the Shulchan Aruch for sure quotes, I mean, doesn't quote the Gemara, but uses this exact principle. By the way, it becomes clear to me that when Rav Yochanan says Mukhlefes Hashita, he has to be talking about our Mishnah. Because that Mishnah in Tful Yom doesn't offer another position. That Mishnah in Tful Yom is just Rebbe Meir. So in other words, it has to be our Mishnah which he's flipping in order to align and coordinate. Okay. Yeah. I should have thought of that earlier, but okay. Rava Amar. Okay, this is now answer number three. Okay, let's remember where we are. Okay, we have a machlokis in our Mishnah. I have a dangling limb. I shechted the animal. Machlokis between Rav Meir and Rabbi Shimon and our Mishnah, whether that the rest of the animal had blood spurting on it from the animal. The question is, did that limb receive hechsher by virtue of the fact that it was connected during Shechita, albeit a tenuous connection? We've now provided two explanations of this machlokis, or up to now, Rava explanation number three. Rav Amar Rabbi Yesh Yad Latuma Ve'en Yad Lehechsher Kamifli Gemara Tzav Yesh Yad Latuma Ve'en Yad Lehechsher Gemara Tzav Yesh Yad Latuma Ula Hechsher. Simple explanation, it really goes back to the beginning of what we learned in the ninth parak. Everybody agrees that Yad conveys Tumah. Not everyone agrees that Yad conveys Hechsher. Maybe that's the simple machlokas. Maybe Rameir and Rabbi Shimon are arguing very simply as to whether or not a Yad can convey Hechsher. Plain and simple.
Which would mean that the Hechsher comes from the Shechita?
The Hechsher for sure comes from the Shechita, meaning the blood that comes out.
Right.
And that blood certainly came into contact with the animal. But now do we say that, and we're going to view the animal as a Yad to the limb, it's just now going to be a question of, does Yad convey Hechsher? And if you remember correctly, if I remember correctly, what was the basis of that machlokas? The Gemara says you can learn that from Psukim, or you can say a Svara. What's the Svara? Because Hechsher is really the beginning of Tumah. So if Yad is going to be conductor for Tumah, and Hechsher is really the Haschalas HaTumah, the beginning of Tumah, so therefore it's going to convey, the Yad will convey Hechsher as well. Or, that's Kavachomer, Gemara just called it a Svara. Right, an argument. Or you could say, no, Hechsher is a totally separate entity. Meaning, yes, Hechsher facilitates Tumah, but it's not the Haschalas HaTumah, it's not the beginning of Tumah. Okay. Rapapa, I remember Hechsher Kona Machshava Kemifligi. This is now going to be number four, explanation number four. What if I provide Hechsher, I can make it come into contact with a liquid before I commit it to being used as a food. Okay? The order, the proper order usually is, first we commit it as the food, then it comes into contact with a liquid. That provides Hechsher. What if I reverse that? What if I first give it water, and then commit it as a food? Maybe that's the machlokus over here. Ditnan, Amar Rav Yehuda Kachai Rabbi Akiva Shona, Chelev Shchuta Bekfarim. Let's say I have Chelev. Chelev are the forbidden fats of an animal. And I shechted the animal out in the village. Now, Chelev is prohibited. Correct. It's an iser karis to eat chalev. So on one hand, you can argue simply, well, if I'm not allowed to eat it, it's not a food. But remember what I said at the beginning of today. For tumas ochlin, it doesn't need to be permissible. As long as you commit it as food for somebody to eat, even if that person is not allowed to eat it, it's still tumas ochlin. So here I have chalev of a shechted animal. Out in the kfarim, out in the villages, tzarech machshava, the eitzar hechsher shekvar huchsher b'shchita. Okay. You need a machshava, but it does not require hechsher because it was already provided hechsher. Now, what does it mean it needs a machshava? Meaning, as Rashi explains, Rashi really provides two separate explanations over here. But basically, Rashi says that who's eating the chelev out in the villages? Really nobody. Meaning, not even the non-Jews, right? It's not that many people out there in the villages. When you shecht an animal, the meat's going to be sufficient. So in order for chelev to be considered a food, I have to go out of my way and say, I know normally no one eats this chelev, I'm committing this as food. Meaning I plan on feeding it to my non-Jewish neighbor as food. So it needs a positive machshava in order to regard it as food. And then Rabbi Akiva says at the very same time, but it already received Hechsher. So you see what happened? Even though its commitment as food took place after the Hechsher, Rabbi Akiva says, that's fine. We could take the Hechsher and apply it to the Chelev. Amar Klafan of Limanatan Rabban and Oshin Shalakhtam Vihidichan Labehem Avanim Vachalem La'adam Tzrichos Hechsher Sheini. So we turned, I'm sorry, Rabbi Yehuda turned to Rabbi Akiva, and Rabbi Yehuda says to Rabbi Akiva, what? No. Meaning, if you committed it to food after the Hechsher, didn't you teach us that it need Hechsher Sheni? And he gave the example of Olshin. Olshin, some sort of vegetation that's not really eaten by human beings. I don't know what Olshin is. It is described in Psachim by the Maru Sugya. Right? Okay, again, some form of vegetable that's not really eaten by people. More normal, more usual is that it's eaten by animals. And then what happened is, and now animal food is not ochel, meaning it's animal food, and then afterwards we commit it as to be eaten by humans. And Rabbi Akiva himself said, you know what, now that you commit it as food, it needs a new hechsher. Okay, because Hechsher needs to happen after you committed his food. V'chazer Rabbi Kiva liyoshonik Rabbi Yehuda. And Rabbi Kiva says to Rabbi Yehuda, you know, you're right. You're right. Hechsher needs to happen after you committed his food. So you see that there were two thought processes of Rabbi Kiva. The first thought process of Rabbi Kiva was, if you have Hechsher follow them by commitment for as food, that works. And then Rabbi Kiva has a retraction. He says, no. First commitment for food, then Hechsher. So Mar Savala can be covered, Mar Savala kechazara. One holds like Rabbi Kiva's initial thought, that even though it's Hechsher followed by food, that's okay. And the other position, meaning we'll call it the Rabbi Shimon position, is like the chazara, look like the retraction of Rabbi Akiva, which is first food, then hechsher. We're up to number five. Rav Acha bered Rav Ika Amar b'nitzkanech adam mitzim l'simen kamiflegim. Okay, they're all technical answers. Very technical answer over here. While shechting, in the middle of shechita, you take some of that blood and you smear it on the limb. Okay, now we know that dam, the blood of an animal, is a machshir. But even that we're going to qualify. Not all blood of an animal is a machshir. What if the animal is alive and you wound it and it bleeds? That blood is not a machshir. That's what's called dam maka. Wound blood. Blood of a wound. That's better English. Right? Blood of a wound. That does not provide hechsher. It has to be dam chalalim. It has to be blood as the life of the animal is being extinguished, meaning shechita. But here the discussion is, in the middle of shechita, how do we look at that blood? Is that blood considered dam chalalim, or is that blood considered just simply dam maka? So, mar sav yesh la shechita mitzchila v'yatzof, ahay dam shechita hu, right? The basic machlokas, shechita, during the act of shechita, is that shechita, or is that like, I'm going to use a bad term over here in our sugya. Is that like Hechsher Shechita? Confusing term. It's like a preparatory stages for Shechita. Umar Savra, Ein Lo Shechita, Lo Sov, V'Hai Dam Makahu. And the other position is no. That blood that comes out prior to the end of Shechita, meaning before you got to the end of the second Siman, that's just Dam Makah. And so maybe that's the Machlokas over here. That's a fifth suggestion. Number six, Rav Ashi Amar, V'Shechita Machsheres V'Lo Dam Kemiflegim. Over here, we're going to go back to a machlokas that we discussed earlier in the Masechta. Second parak, I believe.
But both fifth and the sixth are saying that you're spreading extra blood onto the aver. Or maybe it's just dripping.
Wait, right? the sixth is a totally new explanation. Totally new explanation. And this goes back to what we discussed much earlier in the Masechta. In order for an animal to be mukshal kabal tuma, so it needs hechsher, right? It needs to come into contact with the liquid. And as we have already stated, blood is a hechsher. Okay, the blood of an animal is a liquid. Rabbi Shimon, if you remember earlier, the Masechta says, you know what also is the hechsher? Shechita. The simple act of shechita is a hechsher. Meaning, if you could, let's put it this way. Right, it's impossible to think about, but we'll just put it in this abstract terminology. If I shecht an animal and there was no bleeding, it was a dry shechita, no blood came out, so we would say, okay, the shechita was good because you shechta, you went through the act of shechita, but the animal is not mokshel kabal tuma because it didn't come into contact with the liquid yet. Rabbi Shimon says, no, it is. It is mokshel kabal tuma. Well, where's the liquid? Rabbi Shimon says, this animal doesn't need a liquid. Shechita is the machshir. That's the opinion of Rabbi Shimon. Now, I don't think we adopt his position la halacha, but that's the opinion of Rabbi Shimon. Now, Rashi goes on to say, and that's essentially how we're going to understand it over here. Meaning, in our Mishnah, Rabbi Shimon is l'shita so. Rabbi Shimon is consistent. Rabbi Shimon in our Mishnah says, that dangling limb is not mokshar. Why not? Think about it. Rashi expresses it so beautifully. I'm going to try to paraphrase Rashi. Because for Rabbi Shimon, what's the significant part? What's creating that hechsher? The shechita. But let's dig a little deeper. Why? Because what shechita does is it takes animal that I'm not allowed to eat and it makes it edible. Which part of those animals is that going to cover? Only the rest of the animal, not the limb. Even when I shech the animal, the limb is not permissible to eat. So which part of the animal experienced hechsher meaning the special hechsher, the shechita hechsher, only the part of the animal that becomes edible. Since the limb did not become edible through this act of shechita, the limb is not mukshel, a kabel tumah. And Rabbi Meir would say, no, that's not the operative issue over here. The operative factor is the blood that comes out, and the limb is considered still connected to the animal. And that's why, according to Rabbi Meir, the animal, the limb has experienced hechsher. That's a mouthful. Okay, we have a machlokas in the Mishnah between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Shimon. When I have the dangling limb and I shech the animal, is the limb going to become mukshel akabel tumah by virtue of the fact that it's still connected to the animal during shechita, albeit a tenuous connection? Rabbi Meir says the limb will become mukshel akabel tumah. Rabbi Shimon says the limb will not be mukshel akabel tumah, meaning the limb requires a new liquid coming onto a new hechsher. So what's the machlokas? So the Gemara has provided no less than 6 ways to understand the machlokas. I don't know if I could say, you know, which one is the accepted one, but the Abaye one seems to be popular in the fact that it's Abaye and Rav Yochanan who both subscribe to the idea of how to view two items, big, small, connected with a tenuous connection, and I pick up the small and the big doesn't come along with it. You know, it seems to be a popular approach of the 6. Bai Rava. Behema bechaya mashutase yad la'ever. Okay. Look, dangling limb of an animal. We've said that even while the animal's alive, now a live animal cannot be makabel tumah. We all agree, right? That's one of our starting points in the world of tumah tahara. Live animal cannot be makabel tumah. But the dangling limb can be makabel tumah. Tumas ochlin, right? I can commit the limb to be eaten even while the animal's still alive. Okay. Again, that's a concept. That's an idea in of itself. But that's accepted. Here's Rabba's question. Rabba wants to know, can we look at the animal, this live animal, as a yad for the limb? Okay. I'll repeat that again. Can we look at this live animal as a yad for the limb? Now, think about it. What have we been discussing in the world of yados? A bone. Right? Meaning there's a piece of meat connected to a bone, and the way I pick up the meat is by handling the bone, so that bone is a yad. Now, is that bone edible?
No.
No, of course not. The bone's not edible now, nor will it ever be edible. Bones aren't edible. And yet the bone, because it facilitates, because it allows me to handle the meat, so that bone now is going to be a conduit. It'll allow tumah to both be imported and exported into that piece of meat. Fine. So now the Gemara says, here's my question. I know that on a dangling limb, the dangling limb is subject to tumah. Subject to tumah is ochlin. If I have a sheretz touching that dangling limb now is tumah. Can we look at the live animal that's connected to this dangling limb as a yad? Now, truth be told, if you think about this question and think about it good, it's almost not a question. Meaning, the answer would seem to be, well, sure. I know it's strange. I know animals are not makabel tumah, but neither are bones. If a bone can serve as a yad, so why can't a live animal serve as a yad? I know it's such a, in other words, in the world of tumah tahara, we're in a bizarro world. Because a live animal is not makabel tumah. But that's not our question. Our question is, can a live animal serve as a yad? Well, if a bone can, so why can't a live animal serve as a yad? And interestingly enough, Rabba doesn't provide an answer. Rabba says, teku, meaning I'm stuck on this question. So why would Rabba be stuck on this question? It would seem to be, if a bone can serve as a yad, so could a live animal. So Tosus explains beautifully, maybe not. Tosa says that when we say a bone serves as a yad, what's a bone? It's nothing. Meaning,
it's
not milchik, it's not fleishik, it's parv. Now, I'm speaking in terms of Issa v'Heter. But even the world of Tumah Tahara, it's nothing. So you want to now say that it'll allow a conduit of tumah to pass through it? It is facilitating, so that bone will serve as a yad. But here we're talking about a live animal. A live animal, in the world of tumah tahara, it's not parv. It's not just simply a non-food item. It's more than a non-food item. It's a live animal. Live animals are impervious to tumah. So maybe the live animal is one step above just being somewhere between tumah and tahor. Meaning maybe a live animal is more tahor than it is not tumah. I don't know if I'm being clear in this explanation. But in other words, but you do have to give some explanation, because Rabbah just ends off by saying, I don't know. I don't know if a live animal could serve as a yad. You have to make some distinction between a live animal and a bone. Amar Abaye Hari Amar Kisha Shanata Ba'atzis Ve'igila V'yata Chutz Atzitz Tahora. The Gemara gives a number of these types of questions where I want to know, can something serve as a yad for something else? We'll go through one more, and then we'll have to stop. For sure, we're going to learn more in Shabbos, by the way. I'm telling you right now. We're behind.
We're going to do before Mincha and after Mincha?
Before Mincha and after Mincha.
Why don't you stay in the shul?
I was just going to say, maybe just after Hashkama, after Sephardic Minyan, we'll just learn the entire afternoon. Okay, but we'll start learning an hour before Mincha, though, because we have to catch up. We're really behind. But let's just do one more of these. The Gemara says, let's say we have the following scenario. Kisha Shanata Ba'atzitz, V'higdala V'yatza Chutza Atzitz. Tahora. Such an interesting halacha. You know that something connected to the ground is impervious to tumah, right? What if I plant something in a pot, and the pot has no holes in it, no perforations? You know what? That's not connected to the ground. I know I put dirt in the pot, but that's not connected to the ground. Did you know that any plant I plant inside is subject to becoming tumah even while it's in the pot? Right. Because even though it's in the pot, it's not in the ground. And it's subject to tumah. Okay. That's, in of itself, that's an unbelievable concept. Now, this Mishnah discusses the following. What if I put the pot right over the ground, and some of the vegetables grow over the side of the pot? Now, we've discussed this in the past. Hard for me to understand, but doesn't matter. The Mishnah assumes that this is the case. The air from the ground to this cucumber that's hanging right over the side is going to receive nourishment. The cucumber will receive nourishment from the ground via the air. Okay? Hard to grapple with, but doesn't matter. The Mishnah assumes that that's the case. So this cucumber that's over the side right now is receiving nourishment from the air, which means that this cucumber is connected to the ground. Okay, now, the Mishnah Uksan discusses the following. Kisha Shanata Batzitz V'Higdala V'Yatza Chutzla Atzitz, and it goes outside the pot, Tahora. Now, this, because it's connected to the ground via the air nutrients, this is connected to the ground. So the Tanakhama, that Mishnah says, so is all the other cucumbers in the pot. I'm Rabbi Shimon, v'chimativa l'tahir ala tameh b'tomasa v'tar b'tarasa. And Rabbi Shimon in that Mishnah says, no. Basically, we're going to draw a line right at the edge of that pot. Whatever's outside, that's connected to the ground. Whatever's inside is connected to the pot. This outside, since it's connected to the ground, it's grounded, it's tahor. This inside is in the pot, therefore it's disconnected from the ground, subject to tumah. Baye. Okay, perfect. Perfect. Right? So, mao shetau seyan lechaverta. So the Gemara says, now, let me ask you. Can this serve as a yad for this? That which is outside serve as a yad for that which is inside. Take him. Gemara says, good question.
Same as the animal.
Correct. In other words, these questions coming up now are basically going to be, it's going to be that animal case, and they'll just repeat itself again and again. Okay, I'm sorry for falling further and further behind. I find, I'll try to explain the Gemara well. I don't know if I'm doing that good, but, and then, you know, we end up falling behind, but these are difficult Gemaras. All right, we'll take it, we'll continue tomorrow.